it's Steve and Dave again. We are two guys in a river. I'm Steve Mathewson.
And I'm Dave Getz.
No doubt we all want to catch more fish. I want to, and Dave needs to.
Ooh, that hurts.
But we're all about fly fishing and our love for the outdoors, so let's get after it. About 4 years ago, AT&T ran some Just Okay commercials. Do you remember those, Dave?
Faintly.
Yeah.
Faintly.
Well, the one I remember is a family in a hospital room, and the dad is in a hospital bed waiting to undergo surgery. His wife asks the nurse, "Have you ever worked for Dr. Francis?" And the nurse replies, "Oh, yeah, he's okay." Then the man, who's looking even more stressed, says, "Just okay?" Right then, the surgeon walks into the room and says, "Guess who just got reinstated?" Well, it's not official yet.
Oh, that's so good. Now I remember those, yeah.
Yeah, well, the tagline for the commercial is, "Just okay is not okay." You know, frankly, some fly fishing days or even entire fly fishing trips are just okay. I mean, that's how it is.
Yeah, that's how it is.
Yeah.
So a lot of days on the river and a lot of trips are just okay, and I guess there's no other choice, but you have to be okay with it.
Nice turn of the phrase, Dave. Well, the problem is we had one of those trips recently in late September. It was just okay. But let's tell you about it and why we're more than okay with it. Dave, describe the trip.
So every fall, we typically take a trip to Montana. This year, we decided to do it, was it the third or fourth week of September?
It was actually the last week of September.
Yeah. The last week of September. I do not know why we switched it up after having such a terrific year the year before, but we did. And so we do what we normally do. We hop on a plane, get from Chicago to Bozeman, and pop into Bozeman, and then typically we fish the Yellowstone River, some place along the Yellowstone River. We also fished the Boulder this year. I think we did a day also on the East Gallatin, but
yeah, and the Yellowstone in the park. Yeah,
yes, the Yellowstone in the park, not in Paradise Valley.
Yeah, and hey, the weather was gorgeous though, right?
The weather was fabulous. It was really great weather. But the fishing was so average. It was like a day on the Driftless where you catch about five fish a day and then you go home, right?
Yeah, I mean, the year before, I think we were catching like 25 plus fish a day in Yellowstone National Park. You know, this is like in 4 hours on the water by the time we hike in there and hike out. But this year was different. I think I landed half a dozen fish each of the first 2 days. Now, you landed about 10 or more. You outfished me, Dave.
I think I did until the East Gallatin. I think you outfished me on the East Gallatin.
Yeah, maybe so. Yeah. But, you know, the point is that the numbers were down a lot for us, and we're not complaining. It was just okay, you know?
It's interesting how expectations, we're going to talk a little bit about that, but compared to the year before, it felt so average, and it felt like, okay, this isn't just amazing, and what's wrong with it, because it's not amazing.
No, I know it. So yeah, the first couple days we fished in the park, caught between 6 or 10. I caught 6, you caught like 10 each day, but then the third day,
we didn't catch a thing.
No.
So we decided to fish the Boulder, and on a stretch or near a stretch where we've actually done pretty well.
Yeah, and this was a new section to us, but you're right, it was near a place we had done well. And it
seemed like it would be the perfect day.
Yeah.
You know, the temp, we thought there'd be a BWO, you know, some BWOs to pop, and we even did some streamer fishing, nymph fishing. It was just, I had one on, I hooked one and then lost it. Remember that right near the end?
Yeah, I may have had one strike, but that was it. I didn't have a fish on.
I was disappointed that day, to be honest.
Yeah, I was too.
Yeah, yeah.
And then the fourth and final day, that was probably our best day. I think I caught like 7, you know, four were in the 16-inch range, and I think you did about the same.
I didn't do quite as many. I was probably about 4 or 5.
Yeah. Yeah, it just wasn't as good as last year. So I guess what we want to talk about today is what can you do when fly fishing is just okay.
I guess you could argue, Steve, that when fly fishing is just okay, it's pretty much all the time.
Yeah.
I mean, you could argue that our expectations were really overblown.
Yeah.
But I do think on those days where you come to the river and you are, when I arrive at the river, I'm expecting to have a great day every day. I don't know how you are.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I'm just expecting that with same. That first cast.
I remember the best days we've had, and I expect it's going to be another one of those.
And you know how those best days start out. They typically, not always, right? There was that one day on 16 Mile, took me about an hour before I started to get into them. But you typically know almost right away what kind of day it is. So our first approach or strategy or way to think about okay days is that you, on days like that, you have to experiment and make adjustments, knowing full well there probably isn't no one right thing to put on.
Yeah, well said. Yep.
So, I mean, it means trying different approaches, dries, streamers, nymphs. If you're only doing dries, like your brother was telling me the other day that when I saw him, in fact, last weekend when he was here, he was talking about he was muzzle loading in Colorado.
Yeah.
And he did the morning hunt. It was going to also do an afternoon hunt. But in the meantime, after the morning hunt, he went to like Silverthorne or someplace up there. There was a coffee shop. So he grabbed some coffee and looked out back, and the Blue River runs right behind this coffee shop some creek. And he saw some fish rising, and he had brought along his fly rod. And so he went out there and said, I caught about between 7 and 10 fish. He said, but it took me a while. I finally figured out, he put on a, what was it I told you?
Oh, man.
Was it a
Griffith's net?
Yeah, Griffith's net. Yeah, mm-hmm. Where it's a combination, looks like a kind of a combination of little midges.
Yeah.
And he started to rip them out on a Griffith's net. So the point here is, on these days, and arguably almost every day when you go fly fishing is like this, you do have to make adjustments and do it early and often.
You do. So what was it that worked for us those couple days in Yellowstone?
So for me, it was, you know, I was nymph fishing, and for me it was the putting a stone fly, rubber legs on
that's
the top
right.
fly, and then dropping.
Yeah, because I didn't get a thing this year on
the shaky beely.
Yeah, well, and I was fishing like a JJ special, which is a woolly bug or a streamer with kind of yellow brown. It's got yellow legs, and then I dropped the shaky beely off that. Well, last year that was deadly. This year, like, meh.
Did you catch any of it?
No, I don't. I didn't. So I switched, and you're right. It was a stonefly pattern. I think I got one or two on the stonefly. Most of them were on a size 18. I don't know, I had like a hare's ear or a pheasant tail, something with a bead head on it. But in fact, Dave, I experimented more than ever. Because you're laughing because you know me. I don't like to experiment.
Steve doesn't like change.
No. Well, I just don't like having to tie more stuff on. To your credit, you've tried four different things before I'll even switch my fly. But even I was having to do that. Shows you how desperate I was. And I remember varying my weight, you know, just getting it deeper just beneath the film. So, yeah, that's what it takes.
So that actually is another good point here about change is, especially with nymph fishing, and if you're doing traditional nymph fishing, is making sure that you get snagged every so often. Now, obviously, you don't want to be getting snagged every other cast or every fifth cast, but every so often you need to be getting snagged, which means that bottom fly is finally, you know, near the bottom of bouncing along
right.
the bottom, right?
And so, you're watching the bubbles. Remember, we've learned that. We were taught that by a guide that if, you know, the bubbles on the surface should be going faster than your strike indicator. Your indicator is moving along at the rate of the current on the bottom, which is usually a little slower. So that's one thing, experiment like crazy. I think a second thing, and this is related to it, but maybe this is more big picture, is consider the possible contributing factors. One is maybe we've gotten worse. That's a
that could be the biggest contributor. We don't even need to continue
that's right.
on this point.
No. Okay, we've just gotten worse. Let's pack it in. I think for us, as we thought about it, we realized we're not here at the right time. We're going to go back to mid-October next year. You know, I vaguely remember this, Dave, that it's been 14, 15 years ago. We went the same window towards the end of September, and it's like it's this little transition period where nothing's happening. And I thought maybe that was a fluke, but I do think by mid-October, those fish are feeding a little bit more. We're fishing cutthroats. It's not like we were fishing browns, which are, you know, fall spawners. But, that's an issue. I just think it was a much better time mid-October. And, wouldn't you say, too, there's still a lot of tourists.
That was what shocked me.
Yeah.
So the last week of September, you and I used to always say that roughly around Labor Day, the crowds thin out.
Yeah.
In Yellowstone. Yeah. I would say today,
not anymore.
Not
yeah.
anymore.
No.
I would say it's got to be probably after the first week of October.
Yeah. Oh,
I mean, last year when we went, it was the third full week of October. There just weren't a lot of people in the park.
No, and in fact, at the parking area where we take off to fish, last year we would usually be the first ones there, and we might see one or two other cars at any given time. This year there were 25 cars at any given time.
And think about all the fly fishers we saw.
Yeah.
And we kind of thought, well, people don't fish this as much. This year we went, oh my gosh, everybody is fishing this as much. So the crowds just at that time of year. So you and I have always said, we try to fish the margins of the year or the margins of the season.
Now we're going to have to fish the margins of the margins.
Oh, my gosh, yeah. I'm just not a fan of fishing with other fly fisher people.
Yep.
And it has nothing to do with I don't like them. It has everything to do with that's not why I fish, so that I can stay. Like my son recently went to Michigan, in fact, last weekend, and basically stood in line with a bunch of fishers, fly fishers, and also spin reel fishers, and they were fishing for salmon. And you sit there for, 15 hours casting on the beach, casting with your closest buddy right there.
Mm-hmm.
My son caught a coho after he crossed lines with another fly fisher who was standing there. So you can imagine. Yeah. See, so for me, I would probably choose not to fish.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just how I roll.
I get it.
Anyway.
I get it.
So you
can do all the experimenting you want, but then you've got to consider, okay, so look at the bigger picture. What are the contributing factors? And I think, between the size of the crowds and, that may not have affected the fishing as much, but definitely time of year was an issue. Yeah, the river was in great shape, but fish just weren't feeding with any urgency, were they?
No. Last year, cutthroat are not like brown trout who just slash at a fly or a streamer. Last year we had some cutthroat that were just, they would just hit these streamers and hit these nymphs and all our dry flies. Mm-hmm. And we just caught a lot of fish where it almost seemed like they were hangry. Like they were hungry, angry, and they were ready to hit things. This year, it was just not like
that. It just
that
wasn't.
At all.
No, not at all. What's something else, Dave?
So I think the third thing when you're fly fishing and it's just okay and you're in the midst of it, I think you need to savor the experience and conversations and really think about that, even the little things. So one of the things that Steve and I did this time was we took the time and slowed down to have lunch with a friend from, many, many, many years ago.
Yeah, 40 plus years ago.
I had not seen him in 40 years.
Yeah.
And it was such a joy to see him. And we did it on the front end of our trip. We got off the plane and then we met them for lunch. And I have to tell you that of everything on that trip, it was seeing Jeff and his wife.
Yeah.
And he has had MS for 15 years and experienced such decline. And to see him, he has a little motor scooter now that he sits in. But yet he had great attitude, joy. He was beaming. He was present. you could tell that he just really enjoyed it. And they had driven quite a ways just to be with us. So I think on these, you know, think of your fly fishing trip, you know, if the fishing itself is just one piece of the whole.
Yeah, it's so true. It's so true.
It just isn't the whole thing.
No. Yeah, that time with Jeff and Shelley really started the trip off well. You know, another little thing, we were kind of intrigued to see, to try the new road into Mammoth Hot Springs from Gardner, inside the park, from the entrance, which is right there at Gardner, and that was kind of fascinating. It was interesting because right away it just took you up switchbacks and you got on top, and it was stunning views. But I have to say, I really missed the drive along the Gardner River. You know, you and I talked about that. I just wonder if at some point they won't work on that road, and at least, yeah, maybe you can go down the road a little ways and, you know, spend some time along the river. Or even if they fix the thing, I get it. You need a place that's reliable, and if it gets wiped out again by a flood, well, you'd still have the upper road. But man, with all the traffic, it seems like two different ways into Mammoth might not be a bad idea.
For sure. I would hate if we never again are able to travel along the Gardner on our way to Mammoth. That would be That would be sad. It was kind of weird. Would you say it was an old stage road? Is that what you
said? Yeah, it was an old stagecoach road, and they did a fantastic job of getting that thing done and engineered. It's so impressive, but yeah, it felt different. But I guess to the larger point, that's not that, oh, well, that made the trip, but yeah, it's little things like that you just have to appreciate and say, hey, you know, this is new, this is different, we got to experience this, and it was good.
Another great aspect of the trip was the fall colors.
Oh, yeah.
We just hit it right.
Man, it was.
We probably could have been there a week later and maybe it would have been in full, but we still had aspen. You know, the aspen tend to turn earlier than some of the other, like the bushes and the brush.
Yeah, that red. We used to call it buck brush. I don't even know what it is,
but
that red buck
brush.
It's just gorgeous.
Yeah. Yep. So the colors were just so fabulous. Another really wonderful moment was, was it our third day on the Yellowstone?
Second day, yeah.
Second day on the Yellowstone. Mm-hmm. We ran into a fly fisher who had actually walked a lot farther than we did. He was on his way back, and so we started to chat with him. And long stories, he began to talk about the last time he was there, which is during the salmon fly hatch. Back in what, May?
June, first part of June.
But he was with his brother who was dying of cancer.
Yeah.
And it may have been one of the last trips he was able to do. So it was a real tender moment. So
imagine
meeting somebody you've never met before. You strike up a conversation. Mm-hmm. About 10, 15 minutes later, he's telling you about his brother who's dying. It was just one of those great, I don't know how do you say it, great conversations that made that day stand out.
It really did. Maybe it helped too. We were able to commiserate because you could tell this guy knew what he was doing, and he had the exact same numbers.
He
wasn't having any more success than we were. So
that actually was encouraging. But that was a great moment. Any for you, Steve?
Yeah, you know, some other experiences that I kind of enjoyed. Crazy little thing, but remember the day we were along the boulder and I photographed this abandoned vehicle? I mean, it looked like it was 1930s or 40s. I know it wasn't any later than that. And it had either been pushed down or driven over the steep bank above the river. And, of course, you know, you see something like that, you're trying to come up with a story. I threw the picture on social media, and I had a few people from Montana say, yeah, we've seen this before, and we remember hearing people talk about how they would use abandoned vehicles like that as almost riprap, you know, to stabilize the bank, although this was up a little ways. But, yeah, so who knows? But, yeah, it's funny, just a little thing like that. As I think back on that trip, I remember that. And, again, it's not like, oh, yeah, the, you know, that was worth the cost of the plane ticket. But you know, you add enough of these things together and you realize you've paid for an experience.
Yeah. You know what? That is the truth. You're not just paying to fish. You're paying for a fishing experience.
Yeah.
And so these little things all add up to the whole. So another, you know, the you and I always talk about the eating on these trips.
Oh, yes.
And yes. And so this trip was no different. But we did something that we often do every fall, which is to eat at the legendary Western Cafe on the east side of Bozeman. And then we had dinner in the dining room at Chico Hot Springs.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And Chico is, of course, in Paradise Valley, not far from where Steve's parents used to live, just right off the Yellowstone River. And so both of those experiences were just great dining experiences, different in kind. Food was different in kind. The wait staff and the wait help were you know, two different types of experiences.
Yeah.
But it contributed to making this trip really a memorable and warm and memorable trip.
Yeah, it really did. You know, it's funny, too, the last day when we were leaving, we're going through security. And I think I told you this before. I said I used to come back to Bozeman and, you know, I'd run into people I knew in the airport. And I remember once I got a hug from a TSA agent. And but it's been 18 years since I've lived there. And I don't know as many, some of the people that I knew were gone. And, you know, Bozeman's doubled in population since we left. But wouldn't you know it, as we're going through TSA, I just walked through the, whatever the thing is, and standing there ready to get my bags that were going through the security thing, and I looked up and here was a woman that was a good friend of our family when we lived in the Bozeman area. So I got my hug from a TSA agent. I thought that was kind of cool.
So, that's great. Well, I think all of this has to do with something that the great writers talk about. Annie Dillard, who's won the Pulitzer Prize for Pilgrim at Tinker Creek, she wrote a book. She's written a lot of books, but in Pilgrim at Tinker Creek, she talks about the pearl of great price, which is about seeing your life. It's like right now, if I walked out of this building that Steve and I are recording in and not see the hardwoods that have turned and are, you know, incredibly red, these maples that are now red, if I don't see that, I'm kind of missing out on life. And so she talks about the pearl of great price is this ability to see your life, to see your day. And I think that's what we were talking about in this trip, is to see the whole thing, to see the colors, to listen well in that conversation, to be in the moment. And I think that's one of the great joys of fishing.
Yeah, I like that a lot. Of course, anything by Annie Dillard is so profound, but I think that really is what we're saying. You know, even when the fly fishing is just okay, you can have a fantastic trip when, you have the right expectations, or maybe you can say when you have higher expectations than just catching fish. You know, I think sometimes I've approached it like, I have to lower my expectations, but maybe it's, no, I need to raise my expectations.
Yeah,
would you agree?
No, absolutely. And I think it's another way of saying to become fully awake and see the trip for all it is, right?
Yeah.
Every moment. And to be observant. And I think that's what makes for... That's why I love when we do these trips. Like whether we're going... Sometimes you and I'll go to Minnesota. Whether it's a day or two... It's all these little experiences that make up the whole. And I just think it's all about becoming awake or, you know, setting your expectations
higher.
Yeah,
that's true. Well, hey, just before we go, Dave, we've just released the Kindle version of our book, The Fly Fisher's Book of Lists.
It's been a while since we published that. It's been, 5 or 6 years? But we didn't do a Kindle version, or
no.
I should
Has
say.
Has it been translated into any foreign languages that you know of? I take it that that's a no.
Phoenician, ancient language. Phoenician.
Right. Yes, that's right. Ugaritic, yes.
Ugaritic. So we finally, after all these years, I think it's been, 5 or 6 years? It's now out on Kindle. It's $6.97, so it's not a ton of money. So if you'd like the Kindle version of the Fly Fisher's Book of Lists, be sure to jump on Amazon. You can also, of course, always get the print version. We've sold actually quite a few copies of that book, mm-hmm. and we continue to sell. It's interesting how each month, you know, there's a certain number of books that tend to get sold, and we're just grateful for it. So if you haven't yet purchased it, jump on and get the Kindle version on Amazon.
Absolutely. Well, that'll do it for today. Thanks again for listening. I'm Steve Mathewson.
And I'm Dave Getz.
Until next time, we are two guys in a river. Guys that are just okay.
For the love of okayness and the love of fly fishing.